Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today, I would like to begin our program with an article which I took from the Wall Street Journal, the 18th of March. The title of this article is Workers Switching Jobs, See Pay Raises Diminish. Catherine Bindley and Lynn Cook together wrote this article. It used to pay to switch jobs, but now it does not. The salary difference between those who stay in their roles and those who change jobs has collapsed to its lowest level in 10 years now, according to the latest federal data. Job stayers increased their wages by about 4.6% in January and February. But meanwhile, those who switched jobs received only slightly more at 4.8%. That gap has narrowed considerably since the start of 2023, when job switchers could fetch an average salary hump of 7.7%, compared with job stayers 5.5%. We're not in a recession, obviously, but things are not as good as they were before, said Young-Suk Shin, who is a professor of economics at Washington University in St. Louis. People are responding by staying put. Keith Sims runs Indianapolis recruiting firm Integrity Resource Management and places teams of 5 to 40 people in software implementation with large companies such as Panasonic. Many offers are coming in low these days. We're seeing wages be off from expectations most of the time, he said. Kim Vandrilla, who is 42 years of age, has been working as a creative director for a major consumer brand up until this past fall when she was laid off. She was making more than $200,000 at the time of her layoff. During her job hunt, she is finding the same role listed now for $140,000 to $160,000. And that's at the high end of the range, she said. My first role as a creative director was for $175,000, and that was in 2017. Even in the technology industry, where not so very long ago workers bounced around for large raises with ease, more people today are hanging on to the job that they have. Workers who negotiated their salaries during the pandemic, when the sector drove big pay increases, especially at high-growth tech firms, are not likely to find a new job for more money than they are already making. There is little incentive out there for folks to go out and look for a new job today, said Zuhaimir Musa, who is co-founder of Levels.fyi, a platform for salary data. In the second half of 2024, median pay decreased between 1% and 2% for several roles, including for software engineers, product designers, and technical program managers, according to Levels.fyi data. Bumps in pay were reserved for certain high-demand employees, such as hardware engineers and data scientists. There are two sides to this market, depending on whether you're in AI or not, Musa said. Senior and mid-level leaders in technology face the most pronounced pay drops of between $10,000 and $40,000 each year, said Michael Butts, chief executive of Birch Works, a staffing company. Even in artificial intelligence, managers overseeing machine learning teams have seen compensation shrink by $10,000 to $20,000 a year as companies focus now on hiring practitioners over leaders. No wiggle room. Josh Vogel was working as a director of customer success for a company that makes golf simulators when he was laid off in October. He spent 5 months job hunting and submitted his resume to 2,500 positions using artificial intelligence to populate the application fields. Vogel found during interviews that companies seemed to be looking for the so-called perfect candidate, somebody who checks every single box. During the COVID era, I experienced a lot of career hypergrowth, he said. That seems to be getting course corrected. And wiggle room when it comes to salary negotiations? Gone. If the role is advertised at $100,000, that's what it will pay. Vogel recently accepted a job as a customer success manager for a benefits technology firm. He is making $125,000 a year, which is $50,000 less than his former role, and his overall compensation is even lower once he takes into account the annual bonus that he used to get. No one is paying what they used to, he said. If you don't like it, there are 50 people behind you who are going to call right afterward. But there's a bright spot. As higher-paying roles become rarer and layoffs continue to ripple through the workforce, fewer people are quitting. The number of U.S. workers who quit their jobs last year hit the lowest level since 2020, federal data show, and some economists expect even fewer people to quit in 2025. People are still getting laid off, and I'm not sure that firms are putting a whole lot of budget into replacement salaries, said David Ellis, who is a senior vice president at Korn Ferry, which is an organizational consulting firm. Meanwhile, many internal job changes amount to a dry promotion, which is one that comes with a bigger title and more responsibility, but without the money to match, because companies are dialing down what they earmark for raises. This year's average projected raise for employees who stay on in their jobs is 3.7% down from 4% last year and 4.4% in 2023, according to Willis Towers Watson, which is a workplace advisory firm. One bright spot, though, is finance. Over the past 6 months, most senior-level candidates that executive recruiter Paul Sobrera has worked with have been able to command a bigger salary when changing jobs. Some of the banks had record earnings, and they are doing pretty well, said Sobrera, who is president of executive search firm Alliance Consulting. For finance job candidates with 5 or more years of experience, Sobrera has seen some aggressive hiring and found healthy competition among large banks. Still, he cautioned, one thing that happens on Wall Street is these things can change on a dime. The next article that I would like to read for you is from the Wall Street Journal, the 1st of February of this year. Being the boss can take a toll. This article was written for the Journal by Callum Borchers. Migraines, ulcers, and even premature death can afflict the CEOs, but people want the top jobs anyway. Maybe the job of being a CEO should come with a warning label. 19 chief executives died in office last year, the most since 2010, according to Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, which tracks turnover at U.S. companies. The outplacement firm tallied a record 1,914 CEO exits in 2023, which Senior Vice President Andy Challenger partly attributed to the post-pandemic burnout that many executives feel. In a January survey of 600 C-suite executives by the professional network Chief, 37% said avoiding burnout would be a personal challenge this year. A candid help-wanted ad might go something like this. Company seeks visionary leader to take business to the next level. Incumbent will be paid handsomely, but may have fewer years to enjoy earnings because the stress of the role can reduce life expectancy. Such a disclaimer probably wouldn't put off a whole lot of candidates. JetBlue chief Robin Hayes will follow his doctor's advice and step down in February for unspecified health reasons. The extraordinary challenges and pressure of this job have taken their toll, he said. Yet for every Hayes, there are many more bosses like Oscar Munoz. Munoz rode to the top post at United Airlines in 2015 and suffered a heart attack 37 days later. He returned to full-time work 2 months after the heart transplant and led the company until 2020. I know a lot of people who are CEOs or are in the running to be a CEO, and there is not a single one of them that's like, let me consider whether or not I want to take on the physical and mental stress of this role. Munoz, 65 years old, told me, "It's what we've been working for all of our lives." In an age of performative work-life balance and washboard abs on business titans, a near masochistic leadership drive persists. Current and former CEOs say the job has ever more landmines because many employees often expect them to comment on news events, from Israel's war with Hamas to the latest Supreme Court ruling. Say the wrong thing and you could be marching in the pink slip parade behind an Ivy League president. And bosses are one viral social media post away from being drawn into controversy. Anyway, a former Cloudflare employee who filmed her own firing and shared it on TikTok recently thrust the software company CEO Matthew Prince into damage control mode. When bosses quip that their jobs are taking years off of their lives, they might not be joking. Ivan Menezes was a few weeks shy of retiring as CEO of alcohol maker Diageo when he died last June at age 63. The company said he was hospitalized for stomach ulcers and died after a brief illness. Notable CEOs who suffered fatal heart attacks on the job in the past 20 years included Jim Cantalupo of McDonald's, Samuel Skip Ackerman of Panacos Pharmaceuticals, and Carolyn Reedy of Simon & Schuster. A study published by the National Bureau of Economic Research in 2021 found that industry-wide downturns reduce CEOs' life expectancies by 1.5 years. Most of the more than 1,600 CEOs in the study lived into their 80s, longer than average for the general population, but shorter in some cases than they might have lived with less stress. Nikki Barua, co-founder and CEO of the leadership development firm Beyond Barriers, hit a wall in 2016 while leading a previous venture. She was pre-diabetic, suffering through ulcers and acid reflux, and had frequent migraines. "I'm not the kind of person who could reduce my ambition. That's just not who I am. But I also knew that if I kept going the way I was going, I would die very young," said Barua, who is 49. She lost 70 pounds during the next 18 months through diet and exercise, and she committed to taking regular time off to recharge. She got better at declining personal and professional requests that could stretch her too thin. For Harry Kramer, one key to being a healthy boss was the boss. The former Baxter International chief says that when the occasional meeting cancellations won him a free hour, he would take the opportunity to hop in his convertible, crank Bruce Springsteen, and hit the McDonald's drive-thru. Okay, it wasn't a perfect health routine, but the metal brake lowered his blood pressure more than the Big Mac raised it. Besides, he says, he ordered Diet Coke. Former Best Buy CEO Hubert Joly says he never experienced health complications while leading the company from 2012 to 2019. He gave priority to sleep, exercise, and nutrition, he adds, flashing an Oura ring that monitors his heart rate, blood pressure, oxygen, and other biometrics. Jolie, who co-leads a Harvard Business School program for new chief executives, says he and fellow mentors devote a lengthy session to personal well-being. "We tell them this is a marathon," he says. "Take care of your health physically, mentally, and spiritually so that you can sustain your leadership." Matthew Cooper, at 41, knew when he co-founded the financial technology company EarnUp in 2014 that serving as its CEO would likely harm his health. He did it anyway. "Work was a form of addiction for me," he says. Anxiety, depression, and panic attacks had dogged Cooper as he progressed from one intense environment to another, Princeton University to McKinsey to private equity. His dilemma was that his greatest stressors were also the things that fulfilled him. When negative self-talk veered to thoughts of suicide back in 2020, Cooper stepped down on the EarnUp board and offered occasional advice to the executive team, but he took a three-year break from day-to-day responsibilities. He returned last summer as president, which he describes as a part-time role. "Scaling back is not easy for people whose identities and careers are intertwined," he says, "but Cooper reserves greater sympathy for rank-and-file workers who don't have the luxury of taking career breaks or reducing their hours. There are people who have agency to change and those who don't," he says. The next article, written by Callum Borchers, appeared in the Wall Street Journal the 27th of January. The title of this article is, "Workers Say There Are Limits to Unlimited Vacation Perk." Companies are lifting caps, but that does not necessarily mean employees can take more time off. Companies are squeezing every efficiency out of their teams these days. More of them now figure the least they can do is to give employees unlimited time paid time off. Yeah, right. "Unlimited paid time off sounds great," says Carl Gies, who works in technology sales. "It's complete BS because you're afraid to use it." The signs of efficiency are everywhere. Companies are laying off workers, calling people back into offices, and cracking down on employee handbook violations. At the same time, though, unlimited PTO is growing. There is now no vacation cap at 7% of U.S. employers, according to Human Resources Trade Group, SHRM, S-H-R-M. That is a percentage point higher than when companies were throwing lavish pay around and benefits packages at job candidates back in 2022, and significantly more than the 1% of companies that had unlimited paid time off in 2014. The rise of unlimited paid time off brings up an important question here about the amount of time off that you can really take. Most often, it depends on how good you are at your job, your company's culture, and whether or not you care what others think. While a relatively small share of businesses out there offer unlimited paid time off, the perk and how many workers feel about it is a mini referendum on the state of work-life balance. Geese, 35 years old, did not take a single vacation day last year while working at a 15-person startup. He says the company's small size and hustle culture made him feel as if he couldn't step away, never mind as many days off as he wanted. Some tech workers he knows at larger companies out there curbed their days off to appear dedicated while the industry shed jobs. He says he quit near the end of 1 year and that he could afford to take a few months break before seeking a new role. People with theoretically infinite vacation say their time off requests remain subject to manager's approval, a major caveat when planning around deadlines, holidays, and the kids' school breaks. And some workers out there say that they feel judged by their colleagues if they are out too often. In certain cases, they see the perk as part of a corporate strategy to get tougher, not more lenient. Phil Kutajar says a software company where he was a technical director lifted its cap on vacation days last year. Layoffs followed soon after. Evidence of the connection, people without vacation limits have no time off banks to cash out when they leave. Kutajar, who is 62, says he was not laid off but recently left the company anyway because he is financially independent and wants to write a book. He says open-ended vacation policies can put middle managers such as he into a bind because there are no rules out there to cite if they want to reject time off requests. He once approved a direct report's 3-week trip to Japan because, well, he couldn't come up with a reason not to go. It was more common, though, for employees to fear asking for too much. There is definitely some pressure with unlimited paid time off not to overuse it, especially in the lower ranks, he said. He limited himself to 3 weeks of vacation, partly because he noticed other directors and executives did not take more than that. So, what's the magic number of vacation days you can take without crossing an invisible line? It might be 16. That is the average number of days off taken by people who work for companies with unlimited paid time off, according to a recent survey by financial services firm Empower. A typical worker with finite vacation time takes 14 days off. Heather O'Donnell, an assistant merchant for a sporting goods retailer with unlimited paid time off, says she capped herself at about 3 weeks of vacation time in each of her first 2 years with the company. She wanted to prove herself and gauge how coworkers used the perk. Lately, she has taken 5 or 6 weeks away a vacation each year without feeling guilt-tripped, but there is a trade-off. O'Donnell, who is 48, describes herself as a former workaholic with new priorities now, including caring for her aging mother. If working less hinders her advancement, she's okay with that. I'm not overly ambitious at this stage of my life, she says. It's important to me to do my job well, but I'm not always going for that next promotion. Many critics of unlimited paid time off are looking at it wrong, says Patty McCord, who helped to pioneer the idea in the early 2000s when she was Netflix's chief talent officer. Yes, there is a benefit to the company, she says, and no, it's not all about employees' well-being. When employer and employee act in good faith, uncapped vacation time can be a win-win for both, McCord says. The point of paid time off is to take it. For God's sake, take that ski vacation at the end of January, she says. Katrina Garazarian, who is chief executive of human resources consulting firm Game Day HR, says unlimited paid time off works best with clear productivity benchmarks. For example, a sales representative who hits a quarterly goal early on can feel comfortable taking an extended break, knowing the absence will not be misconstrued as underperformance. In one case, though, she advised a client to ditch unlimited paid time off. Employees in a survey said the freedom to set their own limits did not feel freeing after all. They hated it, Gazarian says. They felt this guilt if they took too much time off. Next, I would like to read from an article entitled Real People, which appeared in the AARP magazine, the February-March 2025 issue. And I quote, these are inspiring stories of friends and neighbors in their own words. First, well, the zebras roam free. Claire Staples left a glamorous career to rescue mustangs, horses, and a few lucky others. In the United States, horses are companion animals. We don't kill them for their meat or their hides, but if their owners don't want them for whatever reason, they're often brought to auction and shipped to Canada or Mexico for slaughter. Wild mustangs get rounded up and sold the same way. Even zebras and other exotic animals can end up in kill pens. They're often the babies of mothers that have been bred in captivity and then hunted for sport. The public can buy horses and other animals from the kill pens before they ship, and that's what I do. I used to work in the entertainment industry as a producer. I had all the material and external things that were supposed to fill that hole in your soul, but they didn't work for me. At age 50, I wanted to change my life. I've always loved horses, so I started riding again. And that was how I heard about the kill pens and the slaughter pipeline for horses. When I saved my first Mustang, I boarded him at a stable. Then I bought my first ranch in Calabasas. By the time I had met and married my husband, I had 9 horses and a few donkeys. I started visiting wild horse sanctuaries to see how they worked. And I turned to my husband and said, "We're going to need a bigger ranch." With a 9,000-acre property in Oregon, I could rescue more horses, and eventually I started a nonprofit to support their care. We currently have 260 horses in about 60 burros. If the animals are healthy enough, we turn them out with a herd we think they'll like. They'll live like wild horses, though we do daily checks to make sure that they're healthy and well fed. Rescuing horses has taught me a lot about patience, forgiveness, and living in the moment. But the main thing here it has taught me is that you cannot achieve happiness by going after material things for yourself. For me, seeing the light came back into a horse's eyes, letting it run free and watching it grow into its own happiness is the greatest joy there is. This is all we have time for on our program on careers today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.